Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey, all you movie lovers, welcome to Real Nerds Podcast. We are the best movie podcast on the internet, aren't we, Brad?
Are we? Are we right now?
Who's better? Name one other movie podcast.
Yeah, they're all gone. We're the last one standing.
Exactly. So by default, we
are the
best. I have
no evidence to corroborate this statement, but I'm going to make you believe it.
Hell yeah. Every week, we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. This week, we saw Fly Me to the Moon. Stay tuned. We'll recommend the film or not, play the trailer, and then we will spoil the movie. We also talk about the big movie news of the week and things we've watched throughout the week. We love movies, and that's what we do. I was going back through like some of my memories on social media, and I'm like, man, some of our anniversaries are starting to pop up. So it's kind of cool seeing those pop up again.
Like?
Our 100th episode, I think, was it? Or the 200th. We did a live show that's starting to pop up. You know, just things like that that I forgot we did. It's kind of cool. Like, we did a lot of live shows in our first couple years.
Yeah.
And did you know also, you'll be able to say hi to me at the Colorado Horror Festival of Horror, September 13th through the 15th. Just say hi. We won't have a booth, but I will be there checking it out, writing articles, going to panels. I really hope I'll be able to interview Tom Matthews and Tom McLaughlin, who Tom Matthews is in, Tommy Jarvis is in my favorite Friday the 13th, Part 6. And he's also in Return of the Living Dead, which is another favorite horror film. And Tom McLaughlin directed Friday the 13th, Part 6, but he also directed Dick Van Dyke on his variety show. So I'm kind of be fun to ask him some questions. So that's where I'll be. Brad, you have a film coming up August 11th at The Bug.
I do. Yeah. It's Doomsday. It's going to make its premiere at The Bug. Another 48.
Yeah. So make sure that you
40 hour film.
Yeah, your 15th one. And if you listened to our show last week, it was quite the trying time for you. So I bet people will be excited to listen to this podcast and know they'll still have time to go see your completed work.
Yeah, I mean, we need those votes. So definitely fill up the theater and cool. Vote for Doomsday.
Yeah, always vote for Doomsday. Even if you don't like it, just make sure you vote for it.
Yeah. You have to vote for three, so just make it one of your three.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, hate vote it.
Yeah.
This week, we saw Fly Me to the Moon. Brad, do you recommend Fly Me to the Moon?
Yeah, I was surprised. The trailer seemed kind of corny, like they're like giving us a hard sell, but I thought it was a delightful comedy. I think it's worth checking out.
You know, it's one of the movies that surprised me the most this year. I had a lot of fun in it. I thought it was really charming and cute, and the music in it was really great. I thought it was shot really well, just like a cute movie. And it's always fun to see I mean, it cost $100 million to make, but, you know, it's Apple money. They don't give a shit. But yeah, I was pleasantly surprised how fun it was. Here's the trailer for Fly Me to the Moon.
Hey, Joe.
Eating cold?
Miss, you're on fire.
It's very original. No, I do not want to stop, drop, and roll with you.
No, your book is on fire.
Oh, my God.
Alcohol and flames. They like each other. Cold days.
Kelly Jones.
Public support for the moon mission is rock bottom.
Every day, something is breaking.
And we're dead. Again.
Yeah, we're blowing up.
The space program is a bloated mess.
NASA needs a marketing specialist, and you are the very best.
Excuse me? What are you doing here?
I tracked you down because I felt we had a connection.
What?
I'm joking. I work here now to sell the moon.
NASA's not something that you sell with a jingle and a slogan.
When I'm done, those men are going to be bigger than the Beatles.
Who is that?
For me, this is a very personal.
He's got my name.
You told me that your guys don't do interviews, so I had to hire new guys.
I'm here for the casting.
Who's he?
You. You're a juicy part.
60 missions in Korea.
I flew 52 missions in Korea.
I flew 52 missions in Korea. How's that?
What?
The whole world will be watching. We can't afford to lose to the Russians. We need to shoot the backup version of the moon landing.
You mean to fake it? No one can ever know what we're doing.
I cannot accept that.
They will shoot you.
What is my budget?
Oh, boy.
I know a lot more about the moon than I know about you. Give me go, no go for launch. If you fake this mission, every single thing that we have sacrificed will have been for nothing.
You know you couldn't have made it to this day without me.
4, 3, 2, 1.
And
my Armstrong is a whiny little witch. We have to recast.
We should have gotten Kubrick.
So, Fly Me to the Moon stars Scarlett Johansson as a woman named Kelly Jones, and she's like an ad executive. I don't know what's her actual title. Or
she's like an ad executive. Well, not an executive, but like just an ad, a marketing person.
Yeah, maybe a marketing guru. Maybe is a better word. Anyways, she does a lot of campaigns, and she's tasked with helping NASA get over the hump of sending someone to the moon. And
yeah, there's a PR problem with NASA where it's like, you know, it's the 60s. There's a ton of like civil rights stuff going on and Vietnam, and people are like, why are we paying to go to the moon? Like, use that dollars to help people on Earth. And so,
The moon project is running over budget. And Channing Tatum plays Cole Davis, and he's haunted by the deaths of the astronauts in the Apollo 1 mission. And he's also under the pressure to get this going, but he doesn't want to compromise the safety of the astronauts, which he feels, you know, obligated to have, which is fair.
Or the integrity of the program. Like, he wants it to remain important science driven, like, I forget what he says in the movie about like dishonoring like the legacy of those people who died, by trying to sell NASA as something flashier than it is.
Yeah. And it's really an interesting, feel to the film because, you know, Scarlett Johansson's Kelly, she has all these ideas to make them more appealing to everybody. And she comes up with, you know, Timex and, you know, Tang and all these ad tie-ins to generate revenue. But not only revenue, but interest in the space program. And as it starts to work, Cole's defenses come down. She's next tasked, though, through Woody Harrelson's character, who's kind of the
he's the deep state dude.
Yeah, he's a deep. There we go. His name's Mo. And so he comes up to her and he says, hey, you know, this has to go well. So you need to fake the moon landing.
Yeah, we need a backup plan.
Yeah, so she hires this guy named Lance, who's played by Jim Rash, who I love from Community. And he plays this really eccentric director, and he's very, I don't know the right word, he's very full of himself.
Bit of a prima donna.
There we go. And so they stage the moon landing, and there is a, the plan is to, even though they're going to be broadcasting the real moon landing, they're going to feed in the fake one so it will look perfect. And that's the goal. And it goes sideways because of a cat that pops up throughout the film, and it's kind of fun. Yeah, you know, watching this movie, it tugs on the heartstrings. Because of, I mean, it's a real story about the men who died in that spacecraft. And yeah, you're right. You mentioned it earlier. Channing Tatum plays, you know, Cole really well, where he's not really into, you know, Kelly, but he kind of gets worn down. But then as soon as it revealed what she's doing, he says exactly what everybody else feels, is that's why he didn't want to become a part of this. And because if he makes, and he says that, you mentioned it, if we make this fake, then we dishonor those men who gave their lives to make Apollo 11 happen.
Yeah.
And it I don't know, that it just hit me like in the heart, those parts. And I don't know if it has to do with it. The aesthetic of the film is really cool. It has a lot of Sam Cooke songs, which I freaking love.
Oh, yeah. The only thing that was weird is like the mannerisms and like dialogue of the characters was very anachronistic. Like very our times. Like, I don't think they would have, like, you know, the sense of timing and humor and all that was very much, like, wasn't of the 60s to me.
Yeah, I call it,
whatever. It's not supposed to be like a documentary.
Yeah, I call it hyper realism. You used a more fancy word, but I forgive it because, you know, Jim Rash's character, Lance, he's definitely a product of our time. You know, a sassy gay director. And it's just, yeah, his mannerisms and his cadence, I agree. But there's just like this charming quality to this film that it really got to me. And I took my kid to it, and my kid loved it. So it plays through generations. And just a fun little clever film.
Yeah.
And I mean, When I see the shots, I mean, I get why it's $100 million. I'm guessing a lot of it has to do with the star power in it.
Oh yeah.
But they also have some pretty impressive shots in the film.
I think some of there's like some NASA footage recycled from that Apollo 11 documentary. Like, that was just like pure, like 4K upgraded footage that they released a couple years ago.
It might be. I mean, I could bust it out. I love that documentary because it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But yeah, you might be right now that I think about it.
Yeah, there's a couple times where like the quality of the picture changed, and I was like, oh, that seems like it's probably public domain footage, I guess, at this point. So yeah, they probably recycled it for that movie. You know, it was like grainier and whatever.
Yeah, and also too, I'm sure even if it isn't public domain, NASA says, you know what, we could really use some PR help since we can't launch anything right now. And
yeah.
And you know, but there is a romanticism to that whole era that I think the film captures perfectly. And, you know, I don't know, Scarlett Johansson was great in it. Her assistant was fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those movies that had fun in the film.
I love when, you know, they first get introduced to NASA and they have like this storage closet, and then like Channing Tatum comes back like the next day and she's already like knocked out a wall, and she has like all the NASA people working on her stuff.
Yeah, it's great because he's all pissed off because he's like, they're like the smartest guys at NASA because they're engineers, and they're engineering her a window in her office. And yeah, that is fun.
Yeah, I guess we also didn't mention that Scarlett Johansson's character is like not everything she says she is. Like, she's a con artist, and so she's been floating through life just like faking it until she makes it.
Oh yeah, I totally,
and that's why she's indebted to doing whatever Mo says.
Yeah, man, good memory. I mean, I just saw that movie a couple of days ago, but I forgot that key moment in it.
Yeah.
That she even, she plays the duality really well where, you know, she's this really strong, savvy businesswoman, but she's also haunted by her past, and that maybe that's not the life she wants, is lying to people. And, you know, and then even Cole, I mean, he learns that he doesn't need to be so cold all the time, and, you know, where his job is super serious, but he doesn't have to carry the burden of those men who died, because that, you know, that scene where he has the interview with the
TV, he gets ambushed. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man. I was like, oh man, I felt like uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Really well done. The guy who shot it is Greg Berlanti, who did a lot of the CW DC shows. So it's cool that he's kind of now moved into that realm. I don't know if he's done any other film. I could be wrong. I don't follow him. And he's done Love, Simon, Life as We Know It. So he definitely knows how to, you know, tug on the heartstrings and play for comedy. So good for him. Yeah. So yeah, you should see the movie. I love this movie. It's one of my surprises of so far of the year.
Cool.
Yeah, and the thing that bums me out is we'll probably never get a physical release because it's on Apple.
Yeah.
So, maybe Criterion, maybe one day. So before we get through this, Corinne did send us a Showtime, and I'm going to go ahead and play that right now.
Perfect.
Hey nerds, Corinne here for another installment of Showtime, where I tell you all about something cool I've been watching lately. I know I haven't checked in with you guys in a bit, but yes, I am still on the Star Wars train. I'm getting off of the Bad Batch right now. I mean, I love it still, but I think I've seen it so much that I'm like, I need to get a little bit of new something into my, like, TV diet. So I've been, but not anything super new. I'm like, again, I'm still in my Star Wars phase. So I've been revisiting the Clone Wars series, which I haven't seen in a long time. I don't think I ever watched it when I was on like Cartoon Network or anything, because I was like a little too old for it. I think I was like in high school or college, so I was, you know, it wasn't in my wheelhouse. You know what I mean? It was not on my radar. I had other things going on. I was watching other stuff at the time. But I rewatched it, or I stumbled across it when it was on Netflix. I want to say it was like 2014, 2015, because it was when I was still in Wichita, and I really liked it. I binge watched it in, I don't know, like a month or two, and they only had 6 seasons out at the time, but I had heard that season 6 was bad, so I never watched it. And then when season 7 dropped a couple years ago, it's like almost 5 years now, 2020 was 4 years ago. I hate it. But anyway, so they dropped season 7 in 2020, and I watched that, and I had a lot of fun with it. I've revisited parts of season 7 recently, but I've just been kind of skipping around. I've been trying to kind of go in order, although at least season-wise, not necessarily like order-wise, because I know a lot of the early episodes are out of order anyway. So I've just been kind of picking different arcs that, you know, it's like, oh, I have an hour to kill tonight, I'll watch 2 episodes. Or, oh, I have, you know, 2 hours tonight, so I'll watch 4 or 5 or 6 episodes, or however, you know, however it works out. It's like, what am I in the mood for? How much time do I have? Or what, you know, some of the lesser episodes I can just kind of put on in the background while I'm working on other things. But it's been fun. And I definitely have appreciated going back and seeing kind of some of the plot threads that the Bad Batch picked up and continued. I guess mild spoilers if you care, but the Zillow Beast coming back, because I knew the Zillow Beast was in the Clone Wars series. So when the Zillow Beast appears again in the Bad Batch, I was like, oh yeah, from the Clone Wars. But I didn't remember how at the end of the Zillow Beast arc in the Clone Wars series, they were like, oh yeah, we want to clone it. And I was like, oh shoot, that's what happens in the Bad Batch. That's so crazy. Yeah, but even just some of the themes of, I don't know how to explain it without going like super nerd mode, but just some of the themes and like the recurring plot threads and motifs and stuff that keep coming up about, like, you know, the choice to serve in the war. This is for the clones, I guess. But yeah, the clones, like whether they have this, whether they have a choice to serve in the war and whether that's a good or a bad thing, and how, there's this character called Cut. He's a deserter, a clone deserter, and he has a family, and he meets with Captain Rex, who's one of the main characters of the show. And they have this very interesting discussion about, you know, did Cut do the right thing by leaving, you know, by deserting his brothers and going off and, you know, choosing his own life and having a family. And it's like, yeah, the clones never really had a choice. So in a sense, like, Cut did the right thing, but he also did the wrong thing in abandoning his brothers. Anyways, they have a really interesting discussion about it. And of course, it hits a lot harder once you've seen the Bad Batch show, and especially the finale. I don't want to say too much, but yeah. And then, yeah, again, I don't want to go full nerd mode, but yeah, there's a lot of recurring plot threads and motifs and things like that that keep coming back up. And that I appreciate a lot more this time around, having seen how the Bad Batch ends. And I'm really hoping we do get some more clone content. I am anticipating it. I would put money on it in Vegas. I'm serious. I would put money on Disney is going to announce, maybe, we honestly thought it was going to be at D23, but yeah, we were all a bunch of clowns. But I would seriously put money on either a Tales of the Clones miniseries or a Clone Rebellion show within the next couple years. Supposedly, you know, there were rumors going around, like, I don't know, a month back that, oh, Disney is hiring for a new animated Star Wars show. So, of course, everybody online was like, oh, theorizing rumors of, like, oh, it's going to be, you know, a Clone Rebellion show. And because I do think, you know, we need a little bit more. And I mean, I am getting a little tired of, like, this kind of prequel to original trilogy era, because we've had, I think, like, two or three properties now that are kind of in that time frame. Well, I guess we've had Bad Batch at the very beginning, then Obi-Wan's kind of in the middle, and then now Andor's kind of toward the end of that, and Rebels, I guess, where we've kind of had bridging the gap between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, which is a fun time frame, don't get me wrong, but it's like, oversaturation could hurt it, so I would be okay with, like, one more show in this time frame. Like, a full-length show, not just, you know, an anthology like Tales of the Rebellion or Tales of the Jedi or Sith or whatever. I mean, or Tales of the Empire or Tales of the Jedi. Because I think they both of those anthologies had some episodes that were set in that time frame, but overall it was kind of bridging several time frames, so it wasn't a big deal. But yeah, I think if we get one more show in this time frame, I think it'll be okay, because there are a few characters and plot threads between the end of the Bad Batch and the beginning of Rebels that haven't really been answered, so it could be in a show, or it could be like in a comic or a novel or something. But there are, I think there's enough interest. I think there's, you know, there's built-in audience of, like, all these kids who grew up with the Clone Wars series. Not me, but, you know, slightly younger kids who are kids, you know, like early mid-20s folks now, who are interested, who want to see, you know, more clone content, or Clone Wars era or post-Clone Wars era content. And so there's a built-in audience for it. I think they got, like, the animation structure framework, you know, all the production side of, you know, they have models, they have sets, you know, a lot of the kind of on the production side, I think a lot of the groundwork is laid, because all you have to do is just take the character models from, you know, the Clone Wars or from the Bad Batch and just put them in a new show, I guess, you know, just keep making them. I don't know how it all works exactly, but there is groundwork there, so it would be easier for them to jump off of, you know, the Bad Batch finale into a Clone Rebellion show. And they also have, like, the thematic and, like, the characters and stuff. Like, there were some people, I guess mild spoilers for the Bad Batch finale, but there were some characters at the very end who, it was implied that their fight was going to continue, that they were going to kind of do this clone rebellion or clone uprising, whatever you want to call it. So based on this, like, we need a little bit more. Like, it felt like they were specifically setting these characters up for a kind of spin-off sequel thing. So yeah, I would put money on it in Vegas. Not a lot of money, maybe like no more than $50 for sure. But, I do think in the next couple of years, we're either going to get a Tales of the Clones or a Clone Rebellion, Clone Uprising show. So that's where I'm at. Okay. Good to check in with you guys. Hope you're all doing well, and I will talk to you guys next time with something. Bye.
Oh, Corinne. Silly Corinne. This is a big movie news of the week. God, I can't talk. I swear I do this for a second living.
It's real news.
So, Brad, we got bamboozled.
Yeah?
When you went to the Esquire and it closed, in the newspaper articles, Landmark came out and said, don't worry, you can go see your favorite films at our other locations, including the Shea Artiste and the Greenwood Village. But we learned that in less than a week, they are going to also close the Shea Artiste.
Sons of bitches.
I know. Then you know, the thing I think that's really shitty about that is, you know, there was a ramp up for the Esquire. I mean, it's still depressing. But the Shea Artiste is saying, oh, you know, by this time next week, everybody here won't have a job.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
I think because, like, someone found the plans to develop the Esquire, like, you know, it wasn't released on purpose. Like, some investigator found it. Mm. And so that's why I think everyone knew so far ahead that the Esquire, like, Landmark was probably just going to, like, surprise them a week ahead, too. But without that, finding that, I think, yeah, it would have been a much more surprising end to the Esquire. But yeah, the Shea Artiste, like, you know, they, like, when the Esquire closed, like, the press release specifically said that Shea Artiste was going to stick around, and they totally lied about it. So,
yeah, that's what, bummed me out.
They didn't want, like, any Save the Shea Artiste campaigns to start up, so. And now we're finding out that, like, Landmark Theaters is going to have to, like, auction off a bunch of the properties that they do own, because they're just so insolvent. So there's a chance the Mayan's next.
Well, the only thing with the Mayan, though, is protected because it is a historic landmark in Denver.
Well,
so
it's a lease of that space. So, you know, it won't get torn down or renovated, but someone else could move into the space if Landmark exits. So it's not like Landmark doesn't own that building. You know, a landlord does. And
but do they have to keep it as a theater? I don't know the rules on that.
They have to, like, keep it most of
the
architecture
aesthetic.
And aesthetic. So, like, people are saying, like, it could be a nightclub, you know? Like, the screen could be used for, like, graphics and things, and you could still, like, yeah, take out the seats, I guess.
That just made me depressed again.
Yeah. If you've been on South Broadway lately, it's a heavy nightclub place now, so that would suck. And yeah, for some reason, they're really clinging to the Landmark Greenwood Village. I'm guessing because maybe they do own that building because they, like, built that for Landmark. But again, like, every time I've been there, it's, like, dead. So I can't imagine the revenue is better. And every time I've been to the Mayan since the Esquire closed, it's been, like, Esquire and Shea Artiste, it's been hopping more since all that business has filtered over. So,
well, we can only hope.
Yeah, it's like, if the Mayan goes, I just don't know, like, like, I guess we have it's great we have the Alamo, but just, like, there's just a different vibe to those places that I love.
Yeah.
And I heard they're trying to, like, transfer the late nights over to the Mayan, but the managers, there's like, okay, well, I'll do that, but you have to hire, like, night security because there's, like, just crazy people out down there that late. So,
Well, I mean, I guess it's good that he's looking out for his staff and patrons.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, yeah, Landmarks was like, yeah, well, it's easy. Let's move it over. But she's like, no, I don't want people lined up around the block at 10 p.m. with what's going on down here. So, yeah, hire security guards and I'll do it. But, yeah, and still no word on, like, what they're doing with the room. But, yeah, Cher Teased, such a bummer. And, like, Cher Teased is also, like, one of the few, like, really handicap accessible art house theaters.
True.
You know, like the Mayan, they have a ground floor, but you really can't get to the other two rooms. And then, yeah, the Esquire, their upper thing that you couldn't get to. So, yeah. Mm. Cher Teased was all ground level. And it's also like a really older community in that part of town.
True.
So, yeah, they like, I can't see them driving all the way over to the Greenwood Village, you know?
Yeah, not that I can see into the future, but I'll tell you a story of the Greenwood Village that I don't know if one of Cary Grant's movies is going to make it over there. That was supposed to be at the Chez Artiste.
Yeah.
If I have a story from that day, I'll let you know on next week's podcast.
Perfect.
All right. We watch films throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, yeah, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, you watch anything of note this week?
Did I talk about Widow Clequo last week?
No.
About the lady who did the wine?
I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, at the Chez Artiste recently, there's this movie called Widow Clequo, and it's about this woman in France? I think it was France. Who's like responsible for like all the best wines, but it was a hard road to get there because, you know, in, I don't know, late 17 or like early 1800s, I don't know what the exact time frame, but you know, a woman can't run a vineyard, but she's married to one who does. And so he gets all of his best ideas from her and he dies, and she has to take over and all the other people in the business are like, are you sure you don't want to just sell it? Because, you know, you're a woman and we don't think you can handle this. then you find out, like, slowly throughout the movie about, like, what really happened to her husband and how she overcame all the negative stuff about, you know, her being a woman that can make good wine. Yeah, that was interesting.
Hmm.
In art house.
Sounds really interesting.
I also watched at the Chez Artiste a movie called Coup. It's got a Peter Sarsgaard. It's set during like what's it? Like the early 1900s plague or like flu.
Spanish flu?
Spanish flu, yes. And so the douchebag from Friday the 13th remake.
Oh, sweet. He's like my favorite guy.
Yeah. He's like
fucking Trey.
He's a journalist who lives in like this wealthy mansion, like off of New York or off of Manhattan. And he's writing about like how deadly this pandemic is. And then Peter Sarsgaard is like a wandering. He's got like a secret past, but he's it's presented. He's like this wandering, like, rugged dude who kills a guy and assumes his identity to get hired at Friday the 13th douchebag's mansion.
Oh, I have seen trailers for this. Yeah.
Yeah. To replace the chef there. And yeah, so they're all like, everyone's isolated and he like worms his way through this family and he kind of like convinces the other staff like on the temple to like, you know, he takes advantage of this pandemic situation to like get them better wages and like, you know, they don't have to sleep in the house outside the mansion. They can like live in it and stuff. And, you know, when they go into town to like get food, they're putting their lives on the line. So he like slowly like works his way up into getting closer to the family and eventually kind of like taking it over and putting him to shame as a man because he's, you know, the libtard journalist.
Yeah.
That can't like he's also vegan, you know, his family's vegan, they don't eat meat, but now
he has superpowers.
No. I know, you just did your Scott Pilgrim thing.
I did. No, Brad, that's like 3 weeks from now.
Shut up. Yeah, so it's interesting, but you can't help but like see the parallels between the recent pandemic in this movie, and it's like a little skewed in favor of like we should go back to like when men were men.
No, perfect. Deal.
Yeah. Peter Skarsgård's character is actually like a co-chef at a restaurant that closed, and like it was the journalist reporting that got it closed, but I'm just like, there was still like a real Spanish flu going around. Like it wasn't just his writing that did him like everything in. So like your argument's flawed, dude. So it's going to get closed regardless. That was interesting. And the last thing I watched is awesome. It's a movie called Hundreds of Beavers. Have you heard of this?
Is it about strippers or is it about beavers?
It's about beavers. It's on Netflix. For the longest time I saw a trailer and I was hoping it was like going to make it to like the Esquire or something, and it didn't. But it's this like live action, basically like a live action Looney Tunes cartoon about a guy who makes like apple cider and then like gets drunk and blows up his whole operation. And then he tries to find like a new job as a trapper. And he like apprentices with this other trapper who gets killed and like takes over his business. And meanwhile, he's like the rest of the movie just like trying to trap these beavers. And like the beavers are just like people like beaver Halloween costumes, you know?
Okay.
And there's like tons of animation and like this live action dude on top of it, and like yeah, it's just like most of the second half of the movie is just him setting traps for beavers and like dying, and the beavers are dying like in horrible ways, and then you find out like the beavers are like building this like this super beaver like mechazoid thing, he kind of like destroys that and tries to escape, and like it's incredible. Like it's like three people and then a bunch of like recycled people in beaver costumes, and it's just a big Looney Tunes cartoon. It's the best way I can describe it. You know, there's like people running off cliffs and like stopping and then falling, you know, like that kind of thing.
Is it foreign or is it
it's American as far as I know, but yeah, it's like a silent film. There's no dialogue. It's all music and just like sound effects. But it's a ton of fun. You should totally check it out.
I should. Well, the thing that sucks is just like social media now, you know, streaming has these stupid algorithms that want me to watch specific things. So I need information like that every once in a while because it's not going to pop up on my feed.
Yeah. Especially, yeah, like this. And I haven't seen it, but like there's a couple other like films that these filmmakers made in this vein that I want to check out. But and there's like a good stretch of the movie where I was like, are there ever going to be any beavers in this movie? And then it finally hits and you're just like, here we go. Because the traps that are set are just like so like violent, and once he finally gets in the rhythm of how to catch them. Anyway, what'd you watch?
So I've been doing this, you know, I have these Blu-rays I own and I haven't watched them. I'm gonna watch them now. I rewatched the 2019 Lion King. And again, that movie's beautiful. It just doesn't have the spirit or capture the heart of the original animated film. Every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, this is a cool movie, but if that makes sense. But what I'm really excited about this week is I picked up the NES Championship Edition for the Switch.
Oh, nice.
I don't know if you've had a chance to play it yet.
No, I want to get it, but yeah, it's like $60, so I've been like, meh.
Yeah. The set's really cool that it comes with. And for those who don't know, in the 90s, late 80s, Nintendo would send out these cartridges that were basically speed runs or little bite-sized versions of the game. Not necessarily speed runs, but you'd have to complete certain tasks in the fastest amount of time. It would save it on the pack. They'd have championships like in malls all around the world. And what's cool is now, because of the internet and how we play games, is they've repackaged it onto the Switch where it has 13 games and I don't know, probably 175 challenges in it, but probably more. I don't even remember. But it's really fun. It's, you know, one of the hardest one for Super Mario Brothers is how fast can you beat the game? And, they'll help you, warp the levels, you know, or the arrows will tell you where to go, even though I already knew how to do it. But it's really fun. But what was really cool is, did you ever play Link's Adventure of Legend of Zelda 2, Brad?
Yeah, barely, because I couldn't figure out how to play it.
Yeah, so, they have, what's really cool is every week they have new challenges across the world where you, your high score is put against everybody else's, and you also play against ghost, screens. So you're randomly picked with seven other people and you have to be in the top four, then the top, two, and then after the last one, you win. Well, The Legend of Zelda 2, just like you, I played it. I remember beating it, but I don't remember how to play it. And that's maybe the hardest thing with this game is remembering all the controls. But anyways, there's this one part where you have to just defeat this like pig monster guy. And so, you know, I'm Link and I run across and I hit him and he gets stuck in like this against the wall in like some sort of glitch. So I beat him in 5.2 seconds. And I got an S rating and I'm like, oh man, that was really fast. So at the end of the week, dude, I was number three in the whole world.
Wow.
I know, right? I was like, great. Holy shit. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how much faster you could beat him. And again, it was total luck. I happened to like throw Link's dagger and it hit him into the wall and it put him in a glitch where he couldn't attack me, but I could just keep on hitting him over and over again. And yeah, so number three out of like 36,000 people that tried this.
Nice. Yeah, when I played Tetris 99, I got first place in the whole world one time.
Oh shit, nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun because you know, every week I mean they have a part where you can just practice playing the speed run stuff for the championship. And it's fun. I mean, is it $60 fun? I don't know. But you get a lot of cool swag with it.
Yeah, I was kinda hoping they would release a stripped down version where it's just the game.
Yeah, they should. I mean, they should put like maybe a $30 version of the game out.
Yeah.
But some of the swag is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like the gold cartridge and everything.
Yeah, actually, the gold cartridge is cool. But the coolest part is they actually have actual pins in there. That's kind of a thing now. But you actually collect pins throughout the game, and it's kind of your icon you can put letting everybody know what your favorite is. Of course, you know, I picked Toad from Super Mario Brothers 2. But yeah, it's fun. And it's, you know, it's really easy to pick up and just run through levels and shit. That's probably the cool thing. Yeah. And that's what I watched and played this week. Next week we are actually doing two films. Did you see both of them, Brad?
I did.
In the future?
I will. Yes.
Cool. So next week, is Borderlands and Cuckoo. So until then, we'll see you at the movies.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!